I want to thank, before I forget it, Clancy for inviting me to share my life with you tonight, and for all of us being here. It's been a really an emotional week for me. I suppose it's been for you. Last week the Russians were here. I don't think much could have topped that. It was an incredible experience, and I'm really grateful that I was, and that most of us were a part of that. It just is incredible to realize that in a few short years how Alcoholics Anonymous has even gotten behind the Iron Curtain and into Russia and is saving lives. It just goes on and on and on. And then in the middle of the week when the story of Bill Wilson was so beautifully done, I thought, such a touching story, little moments of his agony and ecstasy was just, Susie and I were sitting there crying, watching it, and it reminded me again, I forget, I suppose most of us do, I forget to be grateful for really what we found here in Alcoholics Anonymous. You're around a while, as I've been, I sometimes take it for granted. I was grateful for that beautiful story to, again, remind me of what we have here and how precious it is and what we must do to try and keep the light going, as Bill said, so that those that come behind us will have a place to go. I suppose there are people who are worried about Alcoholics Anonymous in a sense that, you know, it's threatened by this or that or this program or that program, but AA for so long has just, in spite of those who have tried to change its course and tried to add to it or take away from it, have not been successful at all, because AA, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and its principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, have to this very day is stronger than ever, as evidenced by what we just witnessed this week. And we're part of that. And when I came in here tonight, I still feel that feeling that's so marvelous, you know. In spite of where I am or where my head is or what's happening in my life, by just coming here and being part of your spirit, something happens to me that I cannot describe in words, but I'm grateful each and every week that I'm still part of it. It's part of my mind, who's from time to time tells me I don't need it or there's another way or what have you. At least today I'm still here after 24 and a half years, thank God. And you are too. And tonight, a particular exciting night. It's election night at the Pacific Group. And that's another layer of excitement that's here, anticipation and wanting so hard to select someone that's going to carry on our principles and our ethics here. It's an enormous responsibility for each of us to make that right decision so that that we'll carry on and grow so that we can still be here for those that come behind us. And I'm grateful for that. Bill Wilson talks about it in the chapter of the solution. He describes it beautifully, I think. He's a kind of a poet in my mind, anyway. The book is full of poetry, really. He writes in some poetic terms, and I love it. It's just, he was a very creative guy, I think. And he had to be. He had a lot of ideas. He was an idea man, a creative sort of a fellow. And I love some of his passages. And the one he wrote about, he said, it seems it's like that we were all, these are not exact words, but the essence of it was that we were like we've been all rescued from a great ocean liner, from the sea of alcoholism, more or less. And the feelings he talks about, the feelings of camaraderie and fellowship, hopefulness that pervades the vessel, he says, from steerage to the captain's table. I like that, you know. In fact, there's the captain right back there sitting at his table now. And he also talks about the feeling I was talking about tonight, that this feeling he talks about is indescribably wonderful. And that's it. You can't describe it to someone. You have to come and experience it. So I hope I don't forget it tomorrow. I hope I am reminded by you what I have to do tomorrow. It doesn't seem to make any difference how long we have been here. I, as a newcomer, and I have to do exactly the same thing tomorrow that we did today, which was Bill Wilson's message. Don't drink today. Keep it simple. Try and reach out and help somebody else. Try and apply these simple 12 steps to your life, and your life will change. It's an absolute guarantee. It's guaranteed to us if we'll just do that. And that's happened to me, and it's happening to you, whether you think so or not. It's happening to us. And my life is today is better than it's ever been, even though it's from time to time it's not always easy, as life isn't always easy. Life has its ups and downs. It has its surprises. It has its moments, many that we could do without. But if we stay here and don't drink and do what we were asked to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, namely to do not drink and try and carry the message to another alcoholic, we'll have the life that's promised us, which is what the 12 steps says. It says to me, at least, I'll have a spiritual awakening, which, as far as I'm concerned, tells me I'm going to wake up. I'm waking up. I'm coming to, I'm finally becoming the person that God always intended me to be, that I always wanted to be. A whole human being with some purpose in my life, and some center in my life, some direction, knowing that I'm going in the right direction for the first time in my life. You promise me if I stay here that I will get everything I need in Alcoholics Anonymous, you tell me. And everything I need I'll get. And when I get it, I'll find it's really what I wanted all the time. And that's happening to me today. My story is a really kind of a boring, pain-in-the-neck story. But I'm asked to tell it, and I do. I guess I'm supposed to hear it, so I will. As far back as I can remember, I was a very nervous kid. I was a tall, skinny, nervous kid. I was irritable most of the time, unhappy, essentially. Lived in an unhappy house. But being nervous, irritable, and discontented is what the Book of Alcoholics describes as an alcoholic. That's exactly what it says. An alcoholic is one who is irritable, nervous, and discontented. So I was a person whose spirit, I guess, essentially was restless and disturbed in some respects. And all I needed to do was add alcohol to that, and I was a full-blown alcoholic, but I didn't know that growing up. All I knew is I didn't seem to fit in anywhere. And wasn't it a beautiful moment in that story of Bill's last week where he was standing in front of the window and he was trying to explain to Lois how he felt? Even when I talk about it, it makes me grateful. About feeling different. Nothing's working. And you look at your family and your children and wonder why you're rotting all this terrible things on them, and you want so much to change, but you can't, and the only thing you really can do is drink again and again and again. And to find a way out. To find a way out. In that same chapter in the Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, there's a solution. It talks about that. It says, here we have found a way out. In fact, at one time, that term, a way out, was a suggestion and a runner-up, actually, for the name of Alcoholics Anonymous. They were going to call the book A Way Out. They were going to call this program A Way Out. And, of course, Alcoholics Anonymous won, and I think it was the right decision. But that's the essence of what we're trying to find. There's a way out of this. It's a life we always tried to live of self-will, trying to make it work, and it never did, and driving ourselves crazy, and drinking, and running, and doing all the things we did to try and figure it out, and never could. Driven to our knees time and time again. And the only way out for us then was drinking, and we did a lot of it. I did. Destroyed everything in my life as a result of that, but not recognizing it early in my drinking. I was a thinker was my big problem. I have another disease called compulsive overthinking, and started my early thinking in grammar school. I should have known I was in trouble then, because I was always thinking, you know about my father. Is he going to get drunk tonight and beat up my mother, or what's going to happen, and became obsessed with that. And not drinking is not going to become part of my life. Thinking. I start out as a social thinker. And later on in life, I became a heavy thinker. And for a while, just before I got sober, I was trying to control and enjoy my thinking. And, uh, And that's essentially the center of our sickness, because the book tells me so. It says the trouble centers in the mind. I like these one-liners in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It says, lay the truth right out there that even someone who's in an opportunity room like me can understand those simple truths, you know. The trouble centers in the mind. Boy, it sure did in mine. Centers in the mind. I was always nervous and trying to figure out, where am I fitting? What am I supposed to do with my life? And about somewhere in high school, the guy who I ran with, he was the captain of our football team, and he was the most popular guy in school. His name was Hank. He invited me to his house one night. Some guy was going to the Navy, and they were going to have a beer bust, and they invited me. And I could never figure why they invited me, because I never fit in. It was always a terrible agony to sit among those people who were really winners, you know, the football players and the various officers of the class and the zippy people. They were winners, you know. And I'd sit in there and always comparing again where in the hell I was coming from and what was happening in my life and never measuring up to any of them. And so when they started feeding me this beer, sticking a stein of beer in my face every 5 minutes, that beer did something for me that nothing ever did in my life up to that time. It changed me totally, absolutely. I can remember that night as if it were yesterday. If we had time, I could describe in detail every person that was there, what they wore, what was in the kitchen, where the tile was, all that stuff, you know, because that was an important night in my life, because it transformed me from this weak, kind of scared kid to a man who could talk to other men, who felt strong, felt part of the world. So my drinking was off, and I was crossed the invisible line, as they say in AA, and I became a full-blown alcoholic from that day. I woke up the next day sick and swore I'd never drink like that again. Why did I do that? And I did that every time I got drunk after that. It was always a struggle. And not knowing that alcoholism is a symptom of underlying conflicts, that's what we drink at. Conflicts to get some peace. And it would just come on me. And I would say, I'm not going to drink. And somebody said, can't you have just one drink? And I say, no, I can't have a drink. I'm not drinking. I say, can I have just one drink? And I'd have one drink, and I'd always get drunk. I'd end up the same way, from the first day to the last. And I dropped out of high school and went to the Navy, got out of the Navy, decided to get married. Thought that was the answer. That'd straighten me up. That'd make me more responsible. And I got married, and I went on a honeymoon up north. And second day in the honeymoon, I knew I made a big mistake. And it was a lot of responsibility, what am I going to do? And I drifted into a depression that lasted about 22 years, actually. And because that's something I didn't know. I didn't realize that alcoholics are children, you know. Childish emotions. Bill Wilson talks about it. It's a great book, incidentally. This book, which is for sale now up here, I recommend it, called The Language of the Heart, which is a series of writings by Bill in the Grapevine. They're just wonderful. They're great just to read before you go to sleep. They're just little anecdotes and things that he would talk about, subjects that someone like to ask him a question about a particular subject, and he would answer it. They were wonderful. But he talked about a letter. It was a letter that he wrote. A woman wrote him a letter, and she had a son, an alcoholic son, who had been drinking, and he was hopeless. And the letter in this book is called A Letter to the Mother of Jay. And if you have a chance to read it, because it describes so beautifully what we feel and our dilemma, which is this feeling of need to be approval, top security. We want everyone to love us. We want the world to acknowledge us. And demanding and controlling our whole world in which we live, and how that doesn't work. And it was a letter of hope that he had responded. It was a very beautiful letter. But it told me again, this is our disease. This is what we drink at. This is how I try and deal with life, is feelings. And I did a lot of that. And I finally decided to go into business. I went into business early in my life. I was 24 years old, and it was successful. And I had always dreamt about making a lot of money. That was going to be my goal, because that was going to be the answer. I watched people who seemed to have things. They were happy. They did things together. Hank's family was one of those. They just did things together. Went on vacations and bought new cars and lived in two-story houses and had gardeners and all those important things, I thought. And And I wanted that in my life, and that became an obsession in my life, and I drove for it. And 24 years I had this business, and it was doing very well, and allowed me to drink freely, and I drank a lot, and my alcoholism blossomed, and my marriage was now in deep trouble, and had been in trouble for a long time, was in deeper trouble, and the guys that I worked for were disenchanted, and people that would come to my office and suggest I get some help, and I had threatened to fire them. And finally a guy came in one day. He said, "You really need to do something about your drinking. I'm an AA, and I want to take you to the Alcoholics Anonymous." I said, "Well, that's a good idea, but I'm not quite ready for that, but we'll see." And I went on and had one more little run at it, and we had a beach house at Capistrano Beach, which I used to run to. I used to love to go to the beach because those people I seen would understand this sensitive, creative mind of mine. And I had a red Austin Healey that was always going to change my life, and I used to jump in that. I'd go next door to Ricky's Valley Inn and start drinking, and sometimes I'd be with clients. Many times I'd be with clients. I don't know about you, at about 11:30 I'd get this feeling, which is, you've got to get out of here. It's time to go. And I'd just leave the client sitting there at the table and excuse myself. I wouldn't tell him I was going. I'd get in this red Austin Healey and I'd head for the beach where those people understand me. It's like I'll just take care of this tomorrow, you know. And I'd go down to the beach, and I'd always start looking for her on the way, and I'd usually find her somewhere and get her in this car and get on down to the beach and forget my key and go through the back window, rip my trousers and fall flat on my face and come around the front and straighten up, you know. Now you got to romance this lady, so you let her in, you turn the hi-fi on, you get some soft music on, you get a fire going and get the candles going and get the wine out and chill it, then pass out, you know. And did a lot of that. And then you wake up the next morning, you know, and you're afraid to look right or left, so you don't for a while, and then pretty soon you got to check it out, so you look right, and there it is. And I always pick up these red-headed ladies for some strange reason. I had a teacher once who was red-headed. Maybe that's what it was all about. Anyway, her mouth would be going a million miles an hour, you know, talking in tongues, and I think, oh, Jesus, what did I do? I left that client at the dinner table. I said, oh, my God, I was supposed to take the kids to Disneyland, all that wonderful stuff that you forgot to do. And now you get in this red Austin Healey, and you're driving home at 6 o'clock in the morning when all your clients are coming to work, and you're thinking, someone's going to see this thing in my car. And, you know, this tall, red-headed thing with his hair all over the place and rouge coming on and look like a Dick Tracy drawing, you know. And you're trying to get a story together so you can lay it on your family one more time. And, oh, my God, what am I going to tell my kids? What am I going to tell my partners, so on and so forth? And you finally drop her off and go on home. And then you see your kids one more time. There they are with that look, you know, that look of desperation and fear that you can't describe it either in words. It's just, they look like they've been in prison, which they have for years. The screaming's over. They can't scream anymore. There's no emotion left. It's just sick. And the whole family is sick. And you're feeling like Bill was talking about when he was at that window the other night, feeling that degradation and that hopelessness. And there's no way to go. And what am I going to do? There's no way out. I've been to psychiatry. Been to the best psychiatrist on Ventura Boulevard for a long time. And therapies of one kind or another. Norman Vincent Peale was big in my life, you know. And Billy Graham was a big, I was a big follower of Billy Graham. I used to read all of his stuff and listen to all of his great sermons. And when he'd have a sermon on TV, I'd listen to him, and I'd always go up, and when he would ask me to come down onto the stands, I'd up and go put my hands on the TV. I thought that would do it. And never did. And my wife thought I was crazy, which I was. And one time a big German SS officer came by my house one afternoon. I was home in a hideous depression. And the guy came in, he had a big bull neck, and he spoke this German. And he said, someone sent me over. He said, you're having a little trouble. And I said, what do you got? He said, I got a sleep teaching thing. We used this during World War II to change these SS officers into superhuman beings. He said, you just buy this thing. You plug these records in, put this little thing in your ear. As you go to sleep, this feeds this information into your subconscious mind. And I said, well, then what happens? He said, in about 6 weeks, your whole life changed. I said, step right in, you know. And I signed up for that for $267 and put it on my Bank of America card. And I found it out in the driveway 2 days later, beat to death with a baseball bat. You know, my wife couldn't stand that thing, you know. But I tried everything, and nothing was working except drinking was working. That was all that was working. And this guy kept insisting I go to AA meetings. And he says, I'm going to take you to a meeting tonight or I quit. And he was a good man. I said, okay, I'll go. And I was was after one of my 3-day or 4-day things at the beach again, and I was feeling terrible, and I decided, okay, let's go. And I went home and put on my new Italian $400 suit and my little Italian shoes and my little diamond pinky ring, so I looked cute, and slicked back my hair with a lot of grease, so I looked like a horse's ass, what I looked like, and I thought I looked good, and he drove me to this big meeting he kept talking about. I thought, this is really going to be something. I can hardly wait to get there. And he took me to North Hollywood Clubhouse and parked the car and took me inside. I walked 2 steps inside that place. I said, oh, my God, what is this place? I mean, I drank at some bad places. This is the worst place I've ever seen. And the walls were painted kind of a sick green, you know, and around the walls were the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they were painted in a kind of an English Gothic religious print, you know. To make matters worse, someone threw a little glitter on them, you know, and bad taste. And over the point, said, we care, and he was kind of tipped and burned out, and it was just terrible. And the podium, the lectern, and the whole stage looked like it was put together by a bunch of releasees from Camarillo State Hospital. And I found later, that's what's true. That's who put it together, all right. And I thought, what am I doing here? And I left that meeting. A guy lived, he lived in my neighborhood, and I noticed that, and he was a motion picture director and a good one, but I didn't introduce myself to him, I'll tell you that. Because I couldn't stand those people in there. No one were up to my standards. I looked back, the guy had a dark blue suit on. He looked pretty good, except I looked down, that sucker had white socks on. And there's a woman came bursting through the doors, and they said she was an old-timer. And she had this red hair that was blown up on top of her head. It was, they used to call bouffant your hair. And the higher you got it, the more stylish she was. And it was red, phony hair, and that thing was waving in the air conditioner, and smoke was kind of curling through that phony hair. Pancake makeup was big, and she had it all over her face, and every crevice was filled in big rouge marks, and she was laughing. People would stop her, and she'd laugh at everything, you know, and she had a mug of coffee, sort of coffee in mugs in one hand, a cigarette, long cigarette in the other, and she was doing this and slopping this coffee all over herself and laughing hysterically, and someone stopped her, and they pointed to me, and I thought, oh, my God, she's coming over here. She did. She came over here and started laying AA stuff on me, you know, slapping me on my $400 suit every 10 minutes, and finally, I said to her, for Christ's sake, don't touch me. Thinking to myself, don't you know who I am? I'm president of a corporation right up the street here, you know. I'm a Rotarian, for God's sake, you know. I'm on the finance committee of the Northridge Methodist Church, I'm saying to myself. What the hell am I doing with this bunch of losers? I'm a self-made man, for Christ's sake, you know. And I went out of that place thinking, this is not for me, by God. Let me find something else, you know. And I tried everything there was, you know, I really did. I couldn't find anything that worked, and I tried them all, as the book says, everything there was. And got sicker and crazier and so on. And I started going to meetings once in a while. I'd sit in the back and try and prove to myself I didn't belong here, you know. And I'd always pencil out the differences in my head, you know. I remember one guy got up one time and said he was arrested while in jail. I thought, shit. I was never in jail. And another guy said he ran over himself with his own car while driving it. And I thought, that's stupid, you know. And an old timer, an old circus people went out one time, said he woke up in bed one morning with a circus midget. And I said, Mrs. O'Brien once in a while, but that's as far as I ever went. So I can't be an alcoholic, except a strange thing happens here. That feeling I talked about earlier permeates these defenses we build up all of our lives, trying to be something we're not. And the feelings are the thing that come through, that feeling, that fellowship comes through sometimes when everything else fails. And I guess that's what I felt, because I felt some hope. I began to feel a little bit of hope, but again, denial and also feeling that I don't belong, all those feelings that we feel when we're new, you know. But there were enough people around that kept encouraging me to come back and stick around until this thing happened, and I did that one night. I got up, a guy was talking. I came in the meeting late. It was a rainy night. I had a terrible fight with my wife. She tore half my face off hysterically. And this guy said, you know, why don't you just come back to AA and do what we do here? He said, this is a very simple program, Chuck. He could see it was one of those people who was going to complicate it, you know. And so he said, just start with the first step. He said, you think that you're powerless over alcohol and your life is unmanageable? I said, absolutely. So that's a good beginning. Now just start. Take the rest of those home and look at them and come back here and get yourself a sponsor and do what we do. This is a very simple program. It's so simple, most people miss it. Don't miss it. Just do it. Get involved. Get a sponsor and do the things that we do here, and your life will change like you cannot believe. And somehow I believed him. It was like it was a light that went from his mouth to the middle of my breastplate here, and I thought, God, there's something happening here I never experienced before. I don't know what the hell it is, but I'm going to come back and get some more of it. And to this day, to that, I'm still getting it. And I love it. And my life is good. It's not been perfect. The other thing I'm trying to learn to give up is this perfection. Bill talks about it a lot. I love Bill, because Bill's was a depressive, and I'm a depressive, was a depressive. I still get depressed once in a while, but I love what he represents. It's what this group represents. I thought the other night, if Bill Wilson came into this meeting and saw what Clancy and we're doing here, would he give us his approval? I'm sure he would, absolutely, because I think this is what he always hoped Alcoholics Anonymous would be, is what we have here. Action. Doing it. Sharing it. Helping other people. Not talking about it, but doing it. And that's begins with what we learn here, sticking our hand out. The first lesson of sobriety I learned in the Pacific was putting my hand out, even when I didn't want to, even when I felt stupid, when I felt inadequate, or I felt nothing. Just put my hand out, and someone grabbed it, and asking, how are you? Many times not even hearing the answer, but beginning to hear the answer after a while, and beginning to get feeling for other people and how they were doing, and see how they were doing. And pretty soon you see someone stay sober a year, and you see them change, and you begin to understand what this dynamic, this beautiful spiritual thing that we have here. It gets better and better and better, even though life, as I said, deals its thing, you know. This year, last year, in many respects, is probably the worst year in my life, and in many respects, but other respects, it's been the best year in my life. I heard that in AA a long time, never knew understand what that meant until I experienced myself, which was essentially this year. Which is why I've been in business for a number of times. I've been in business 3 times, tried to make it go, failed every time. And, you know, a good explanation of insanity is to continue to do the same thing over and over again with the same result. That's a pretty good, and that was me. And they kept trying to tell me, you're not a businessman, you're an artist and you're whatever, but you're not, you shouldn't be in business. But I couldn't believe it. I had to try it myself, and I did. And when that thing finally turned upside down, it was like I couldn't believe this was happening to me. It was like I'm 62 years old, and what is happening? And I wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I thought I should be able to apply these principles to this, and it should go away, but it wouldn't go away. It just kept facing me in the reality of life, thank God. But Clancy encouraged me a lot, not to drink and just hang in there, and everything's going to be okay, and just get the hell out of there and do something. Go back to work, which I did. I went back to ask for the job I'd had 3 times before, and they were glad to have me back. And I had to sit down and learn again to be a worker among workers, which I'd never been before. Show up at 8 o'clock like everybody else and do the simple things that they do, writing purchase orders I haven't done in 15 years, and trying to get my head so it'll work, so it'll do it. But it's been good for me. It's been an enormous surrender of ego, an enormous surrender to what you've been trying to teach me for a long period of time, that a job and a business is not the end in itself, it's a means to an end. This is the end. This is the purpose of us being here, is to stay sober and try and help somebody else. We have to be self-supporting, sure, but we don't need to put it first in our life. And I wasn't even recognizing putting it first in my life, but I was. So I'm glad that I have gone through that lesson, and I'm still going through it, and I still have the wreckage of my present to take care of, but I'm guaranteed by you, and by the Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and by the writings of Bill Wilson, who's been through it many times, and by Chuck Chairman and others of you who have shared your life with me, it's okay. Just don't drink today. Surrender today. Help somebody else today. Keep it simple today. Show up, be an example today, the best you can. And you too will wake up, Chuck, and continue to find the thing that you found in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm grateful for this. I'm grateful for this program more than I can ever tell you. I love it. And I recommend it. And I hope you stick around, each and every one of you. We lose too many people in Alcoholics Anonymous, no question about that. And that's a mystery in some respects, but it's quite real in other respects. And I can understand it more. I sometimes understand it more when I go through difficult periods in my life, because I can see how hopelessness can somehow get a hold of me and think there's another answer someplace else. Or just hopeless, why try, screw it, just give up. You know, that happens to so many. If we could just make that call, one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic, because it says this is what Bill's message still is. Still is. Talking about it. Talking about the way you feel. I don't care how long you've been sober. If you're going through a difficult period, let somebody know it. Don't try and look good like I've done so many times. Looking good was my thing, and that gets you sick, and we don't see people. They get drunk. A guy, 20 years old, called me at 4 o'clock in the morning. A guy sponsored when he first came to LA. He was doing well for a long time. He was crazy. He was about to drink.
I never heard him crazy. I couldn't recognize him on the phone. He was so crazy. And I said, what's happening to you? He says, I got caught up in some of the program. I forgot what you call it. I can't remember what it was. But anyway, he was a dependency program of some kind. He hadn't been going. I said, are you going to any AA meetings? He said, no, I haven't gone. I said, for God's sake, man, don't you know? Somehow his mind just closed the idea. He just got so caught up in himself that he was this close to getting drunk. And we lose a lot of old-timers, unfortunately. And the best part of their sobriety, when they have so much to give, they lose it. Too many of them. Too many of them. It's sad. Where do they go? I'm not sure where they go, but I hope and pray that I stay here. I hope and pray that you stay here. And it's guaranteed that I will stay here if I surrender on a daily basis. And try and be honest. That's tough. That's tough for us to be honest. That's why I guess Bill put in chapter 5, in the first paragraph, it says that by 3 times the word self-honesty is written. You can't escape it.
Self-honesty. Being willing to give up. Be willing to follow direction from someone you don't necessarily always believe, maybe. To believe it'll work for you. But to come here and do that, and try, just try, which is absolutely diametrically opposed to our nature, is to help somebody else. Chapter 5 reads it to me very clearly. Even I can understand it in my confused mind. It says, selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of my sickness. R-O-O-T, the root. Still is today. Bill talks about it. It was. There's another beautiful thing in this book I just talked about, A Language of the Heart, where he talks about emotional sobriety, the next frontier, written by Bill W., where he was sober for long periods of time. Whether members of Alcoholics Anonymous are sober long periods of time, who get to a point where the bloom goes off AA. They kind of lose the magic. And they finally realize that they became too dependent on other people and too dependent on things, and false dependencies on things that are not really important. And that's a big surrender, but it takes a lot of people to encourage those people to stay here. Save the old-timers, I say. In fact, I'm going to have a bumper sticker made that's going to say, save the old-timers, you know. So anyway, I'm glad that I'm here. I'm glad that I'm married to my wife, Susie. We've had our ups and downs, you know. And I wouldn't want this to get out of this room, but I'm not the easiest guy in the world to live with. I'm just a shade intense and some people rather call it crazy. You pick what you wish. But it's okay. We're both doing the best we can, and we're trying. That's the main thing. You know, we found that AA is the best answer for us. We've tried other therapies, and we had one marriage counselor quit marriage counseling altogether and got through with us. Put his hat on and took his credentials and left, and we haven't seen him since, you know. And someone may say, why don't you just try the 12 steps of AA to your life and just try to accept the other person for what she or he is and be grateful for their strength and accept their weaknesses, because we all have both. And you got a chance of staying here another day and having a life. And we have. We have two beautiful kids I love very much, and I'm touched all the time when those kids climb up on my lap. Scotty, who's 6, Laura's 12, and tell me they love me. These kids I never saw either Susie and I drunk. I had 5 other children, and they were wrought with a lot of emotional stuff. I have 2 kids, 2 young fellas. One is just crazy as heck. He's off somewhere doing his own thing and hating me. That's okay. I love him anyway, and I love him with all my heart. And I hope someday he finds, and I've told him this, I hope someday you find what I found in Alcoholics Anonymous, which is some peace in my life and some hope in my life to know, regardless of what happens in our lives, anything that can happen in our lives, we can get through it together. We can do it together. I can't do it alone anymore. I found it out this year. I can't do it alone. I'm grateful for all of you for putting up with my arrogance and my selfishness and my nonsense this year. And I'll try and do better. And I'm grateful to be here. And I want to thank Clance again for inviting me. And I want to remind you of those 5 words one more time in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which says, here's a way out. I'm glad I found it. I hope you do too. Thank you very much.